Appreciate that, Charles E. You know, I believe you were the first person that I called their name out to when we came to meet and try out here. That was great. I've learned probably just one thing from Charles E. over the year. I'm just kidding. Learned a lot from Charles E. over the year. We all might need to start doing this. What he does is makes a list of everybody he meets, and he writes it on a post-it note or a piece of paper in his Bible. And Charles E., you know, since you've taught me that, I've been doing it. And we might need to do that as a congregation. At the very least, we might need to put out a new directory at some point very soon. There's a lot of new, exciting families who are part of our spiritual family. And I've had a chance to get to meet and know most everyone pretty closely. And you need to have that opportunity and do the same thing. Put yourself out there. Meet some new folks from the Tuckers, the Sweeneys, the soon-to-be McCormicks. And I'm not going to talk about the wedding date much more. From the Holtz and the Voits and several others I know that I'm missing but have recently come and decided to be with us. It's exciting. Just put yourself out there, meet somebody. Get to know somebody. They may encourage you and build you up more than you can expect. Let me tell you something about myself. I in no way try to appear to be the smartest person in the room. I can do a couple of things, handiwork around the house. I built a bench and I put it on the front porch. I thought it was pretty cool. It's the size of a triple X person, so when I sit on it, my feet are dangling off the ground like a little child. Maybe a little bit too large, but all in all, the build was pretty good, pretty solid. But other than being able to build, there's some other things that just get past my sight. Well, we've been living in our new house at this point, not now, but when this story takes place. We were living in our house for probably, 6 months or so. And for the longest time, I kept thinking, man, as I'm in the shower, I've got to get that light replaced. There's probably some electrical wiring up there that's old and bad. I've got to work on that. You know, week would pass, another month would pass. Here it is, 6 months, and I've yet to do anything about the light in the bathroom. Now, we had another light, but that other light was kind of down the bathroom. So in reality, you were just taking a shower in a dimly lit place, hoping not to slip and fall. And that's just what it was for about 6 months. So finally, I decide, you know what? I'm going to check it out. So I get my ladder in there, climb up, remove the fixture, unscrew the light bulb, put a new light bulb in, and guess what? She's working just like new. So for 6 months, I didn't even think, just change the light bulb. And even though it was something small, that light shone so brightly. And boy, do I enjoy it, actually being able to see my shampoo and my soap. When something new like that shines, boy, isn't it bright. Well, this afternoon, I found a new text. Now, it's not new to the Bible, because the Bible is ancient words, long preserved for our walk in this world. But to me, it is a light that is shining brightly. And even though it might seem small to some people, it is something that is shining incredibly bright to me in my life. And I want to share it with you tonight. Maybe it's new to you too. Now, this has to do and deal with exactly what we talked about this morning in desiring God through prayer and through fasting. That text is Isaiah chapter 58, verses 1 through 8. I've never seen it before. I've probably read it before, but I've not really thought to stop and focus in on it before. Have you? All right, well, open up. Go ahead and get your pages turning. I have the words on the PowerPoint screen for everybody to read. And if not, you can find your own copy of the word. A little bit of background. Isaiah chapter 58. This is in the second half of Isaiah. He is prophesying to Judah, the southern tribes, who were the faithful group at this point in time, well, at least as far as the calling is concerned. And the promise was going to be through that people to all nations. And eventually, Isaiah is going to declare and make several statements that are wonderful and awesome. And we're going to read those in just a little bit. But this is a plea from God through Isaiah to God's people. And this is why it's important. Are you God's people? Yes. Do you need to hear this message? Yes. And can it impact your life? Absolutely. Because we're trying to figure out fasting 101. Why do we do it? How do we do it? And then what does it do in the life of the Christian? So hear the words of Isaiah. Cry aloud. Do not hold back. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their transgression, to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways, as if they were a nation that did righteousness. Did you hear that, by the way? As if they were a nation that did righteousness. I remember when that phrase was popular back in the 90s, my teenage sister would say it often, as if. It's not popular or cool anymore, but some of you know what I'm talking about. As if, because they're not, as if they were a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the judgment of their God. They ask of me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. And then there are these series of rhetorical questions starting in verse 3. Why have we fasted and you see it not? Why have we humbled ourselves and you take no knowledge of it? Is the question the people were asking almost of God. We were practicing the act. We were checking it off the list, but you weren't taking knowledge of it? Were they fasting incorrectly? Here's what happens. I'm sorry. Halfway through verse 3. Behold, in the day of your fast, here's the problem. You seek your own pleasure or your own purposes, and you oppress all your workers. Behold, you fast only to quarrel and to fight, and to hit with the wicked fist. Fasting like yours this day will not make your voice to be heard on high. What was the problem? The problem in that moment with that fast, just like any moment of any time or any practice in life, is this. When you seek your own pleasure, it's not going to work out for you. If you oppress other people, it's not going to work out for you. If you do something and end up just quarreling with other people, it's not going to work out for you with God. If you're mean and angry and are led to fight with other people, it does not jive with our God. But here's the core issue. If you missed it, they were checking off the list. Well, we did the thing we were supposed to do. Yeah, but your heart was far from me. Yeah, but we were in the church building. But your heart was far from me. My Bible is on my phone. Yeah, really, your heart is far from me. Is it possible to do the act, to be in the place, to wear the name, yet have your heart to be far from Him? I think that's the issue that Judah, God's people, faced, and maybe even some of us still deal with today. And fasting like that this day will not make your voice to be heard on high. We need to hear Jesus' words. In Matthew 6, 16 to 18, when he said, don't fast like the hypocrites. Well, woe is me. And they put ashes on their forehead to look withered and weary. Sackcloth and torn clothes, showcasing, I'm fasting and it's terrible. As if it were a show. Are they doing the act? They're probably fasting, yes. But their heart is far from God. What is fasting? First and foremost, it is humbling ourselves before God. It is a lowering of oneself, submitting oneself. It's intentionally laying aside something that I could have, that might even be good for me to have, that's not inherently wrong to have, but I lay it aside and I put it apart because I know I can draw closer to God when I lay it aside. Even in the marriage relationship, and I know there are some people in the room that aren't married and don't have marriage relationships, but it's absolutely biblical that married couples can separate from each other, meaning physically, meaning in a physical intimate relationship for a period of prayer, and then draw back together lest temptation comes and pulls people away. So there's some power to this. Laying aside something that might even be good for me, for something that might be better for me. And so the text carries on. Is such this fast that I choose a day for a person to humble himself? In other words, Isaiah is saying, when you have this type of attitude, are you really humbling yourself? No. It's like the person that comes to the church building but sits there. Their mind is far from the worship of God. Their heart is nowhere close to loving the Lord and sacrificing itself to God, submitting itself to the Lord. You're not humbling yourself. You might be in the right place at the right time. You might be doing the act, but your heart is far from me, and that's a problem. So is such the fast that I choose a day for a person to humble himself? Is it to bow down his head like a reed? I love the imagery there. I had to do some reading on what type of reading. I just caught that. For those of you who are listening, it's R-E-E-D. So the reed that would grow up with a weak base and a heavy top spot, its head, where that top piece is, would bend over and be drooping down. So I did some reading about it. All right, well, some of you just aren't going to get it tonight. That's all right. I'm a dad, which is a negative, and I'm a preacher, which is a negative, but you know what they say, two negatives make a positive. So what he's saying here is it to bow down his head like a reed? No. If you walk around in your fast, if you partake in this, with your head drooped low, acting all sad and forlorn, what you're doing is showing off. And that's hypocrisy. That's not humility. God doesn't want hypocrisy. He wants humility. He doesn't want you just to do the act. He wants your heart to be committed in the act. Is it to bow his head like a reed and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? It's a rhetorical question. Will you call this a fast and a day acceptable to the Lord? Absolutely not. So when you participate in a fast, because remember Jesus said when, not if. So when you participate in a fast, and remember Jesus said they will. And by the way, the text I referenced this morning about the bridegroom is Matthew chapter 9, 14 to 18. I realize that I never said that this morning. I apologize for that if you're taking notes. Matthew chapter 9, 14 and following, you can read that whole story there. It's wonderful. So he said, when you fast, my people will fast when I go away. Well, guess what? Jesus is away. And so we must be taking part in some type of fast at some place. Also of note, check this out. When Jesus comes back and we're ushered into heaven, what are we going to take part in heaven? It's a heavenly feast. We fast here so we can feast there. Boy, isn't that cool? You might not have chill bumps on your body, but I sure do. So he says this in verse 6. Which is up there. Is not this the fast that I choose? Here's the principles of a biblical, godly fast. You ready for it? To loose the bonds of wickedness. Maybe I'm struggling in sin, and I have a habit of sin that's eating away at my life and my heart. And I don't know how I can rip it out, how God can rip it out. But it is ripping me apart on the inside. God, help me. Maybe it's through a fast. You loose the bonds of wickedness. To undo the straps of the yoke. Maybe you feel burdened by some type of trial. You feel burdened and tied down by some life situation that you found yourself in. You don't know how you can be set free. You know the freedom that the New Testament talks about. Maybe you fast. To let the oppressed go free. Have you been holding forgiveness, as Cody talked about in his family devotional this past Thursday night? And he said, rightly so, that the person who chooses not to forgive is the one who hurts the most. That person doesn't really, probably doesn't even know what they did. But the one who holds on to it is hurting the most. Maybe you're struggling to let the oppressed go free. Maybe you're enslaving somebody by oppression, ill will, bad thoughts. Maybe you need to fast and to break every yoke. I think that has some Old Testament context of maybe some slaves in the home. Maybe some people that you've kept and are keeping that need to go and be set free. That's back in that Old Testament context. I don't know what the case may be. But then he says in verse 7, listen to the principle. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry? You fast from a meal? Guess what you can do with that meal? Go give it to somebody else. To bring the homeless, poor, into your house. Maybe there's somebody who is destitute spiritually that needs to be brought closer to God. You fast from something in hopes of bringing them closer to the God of heaven and earth. When you see the naked, to cover him. Maybe instead of going out and buying that outfit, you go buy an outfit with the purpose of going and giving it to somebody else that actually needs that outfit. I won't forget when I was in college, I was a part of a social club, it's Chi Beta Chi, and there was a girls' devotional. And the girls' chaplain said, bring your favorite outfit to the devotional. And some girls brought their favorite. High-priced items, but not just high-priced items, meaningful outfits, dresses. And then she challenged every college girl to lay the outfit down and let her go give it to homeless women in the area. The girls left, some in tears, I heard. Maybe we fast from something like that. And not to hide yourself from your own flesh. That last phrase. We lie to ourselves when we act as if this world is our home. We deceive ourselves when we think that this is where we belong. That we should fit in. Newsflash, we won't. And in my opinion, in some instances, we shouldn't. Now, I know that's hard for some people. And that was miserably hard for me. Miserably hard for me. I remember vividly in high school, people would say, hey, don't cuss around Austin, he's a preacher's kid. And I would say, no, it's okay, I can handle it. I can handle it. Because in middle school, when I had any mind and confidence about myself, I just asked my friends, hey, would you not say those things around me? I don't like to hear it. But then when I got to high school and I became self-conscious and I lost my sensical mind for God, I said, hey, don't worry about it. Bring it on because I can handle it. Why? Because I was embarrassed. I know it's hard for some people at some ages. I know that. I was there. But I also know it's a lie to think that this place is my home. I should be here. I belong here and I should fit in everywhere here. You shouldn't. And you should be prideful of that. Not prideful in yourself, but prideful in your Lord. So maybe it's time you open your eyes to who you really are in a fast. The whole of the fast is this. It is a reorientation of any focus from self to God. A friend of mine was reading and he said this about a fast. That a fast is an act of war against the enemy. It's an action of proactivity against sin and wickedness. It's an act of proactivity against wickedness and for righteousness. It's an act of laying down myself, as Jesus said, come to me, sure. Deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow. It's an act of denying myself for the purpose of following after Jesus. So what is holding you back? I know biblically there is several examples of how we can fast. You can fast privately, like Jesus spoke about in Matthew chapter 6, verses 16 to 18. That's a quote. I might put it on our website or church Facebook page or something. But I want to move on from it real quick. You might need to fast personally and privately. You might need to fast when no one else knows that you're doing it. You might need to fast collectively with another group. I've had a brother in Christ ask me to fast with him about one specific subject and thought and life situation, and it was incredible. I hope it was for him too. You might need to fast as a group. You might need to fast with an even bigger group. I love the Ezra text. If you're taking notes, write down Ezra chapter 8 and read verses 21 and following, because he proclaimed a fast at the river, not just for him, but for all the people. And so all the people had to jump on board with whatever Ezra wanted to fast for. And he said specifically, to humble myself, to seek God, and to grant safety on our travel. Isn't there something awesome and communal about God's people committing to this purpose together? Don't you find strength in community? Don't you find strength when your brothers and sisters are there with you? I know I do. And when you fast, what do you feel? You feel physical weakness. So what do you need? You need community strength. Maybe this is where you find it. Maybe you felt alone on your walk and in your walk with Christ. Maybe you reach out to somebody. Fast with me. I need somebody else as I draw closer to God. There's a biblical precedent for all of these. Maybe it's a congregational fast for some reason. Acts 13 is the biblical model for that. They worship with prayer and fasting. Maybe we have some big things coming up as a church. Maybe we need to fast. I don't know if it's from food. It can be from food. One of my tips in Fasting 101, and that's so hard to read. One of my tips is to consider fasting from things, number 5, other than food. Maybe as a family, you fast from television at night and you read Bible stories together every night this week. Maybe that's your fast. Maybe your fast as an individual is not to listen to music on the way to work this week, but you put in the Word of God and you let your car be surrounding you with the Word. Maybe that's what you fast from. I don't know what you're going to fast from. I know my Lord said when, not if. So here's some tips. Pray for guidance. Prayer needs to be interwoven through every piece of a fast, before, during, and after. We draw and we gain a desire for God through prayer and fasting. Fasting in and of itself is just neglecting something and getting rid of something. Prayer is where we bring God into the story. And so pray for guidance and pray during and pray after, that I'll have faith to carry out what God has revealed to you. Plan ahead. Don't just think, you know what? I'm not that hungry today. I'm going to fast. I don't think that works. You plan ahead. You plan the sacrifice. When God's people would travel to the tabernacle and then later on to the temple, do you think they got there? Oh, yeah. Supposed to bring a 4-legged animal with me. Oh, I forgot one of those. Where's the lamb store? No. Can you imagine the preparation that took place? As they helped to give birth to that animal. And then they helped that animal to grow and cared for that animal, because they had to sacrifice the year old without spot or blemish, the male, the best of. So what did they do? They took care of it. They set it aside. They knew the purpose of that animal. And so when it was time to go, they prepared for it. They had to feed it along the way. And traveling must have been tough. I travel with children. Imagine traveling with an animal that can't talk to you. I can't imagine the planning that took place. But this was the mind of God's child back in that time frame. Has that mind been lost amongst us today? Plan ahead. Plan ahead. Start small. I was reading a fast journal of an individual. He said, you know, I really started small and started to work my way up. He said, I'm really not where I want to be. He said, now I can fast for about 2 weeks of food. So he says, I spend 2 weeks every year, and I read a gospel account from beginning to end every day for 2 weeks. All of Matthew, all of Mark, all of Luke, or all of John, every day for 2 weeks. He said his goal is to get up to 2 or 3 months. I'm not saying you go there. I'm not saying there's a point in doing that. What I'm simply saying is this. You're probably not there. So you start small. Maybe one meal and you pray for 30 minutes that you would have been eating, an hour. Maybe then it turns into 24 hours. And see where it goes. Consider how it affects others. If you're the person that prepares the food for the family and you're fasting, yeah, that's going to hurt some people. So what you don't need to do is think about the pink elephant. If you're the one that prepares the food, say, hey, husband, or hey, wife, I'll be fasting on this day, and if they're not fasting with you, can you prepare the food for this day? Or pre-prepare the food so it's in the fridge and everybody can go get it very easily. Consider how it affects others. I think that would be wise, and create a schedule. Every fast I've been a part of, I've had an hourly prayer and reading schedule. Because here's what happens to me, it might with you too. If you don't schedule something, do you carry it out? No. If it's not on my calendar, it's probably not going to happen. If it's not written down on a piece of paper, it's probably not going to happen. If I don't get a notification on my phone about it, it's probably not going to happen. So you schedule that time. What does this do? This ensures that your sacrifice will help bring God into life and into focus as you reorient yourself away from yourself more to others. Because what did Jesus say? Love God, love others. And maybe it's past time for you to get there. And you need to get there fast. If I've quoted it once today, I think I've quoted it three times. Specifically, from Ezra 8:21, and we'll conclude. Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God, to seek from Him a safe journey for ourselves, our children, and all our goods. Maybe you just need to humble yourself before the Lord God today. As Isaiah said, this is how I fast. Sacrificing and letting go. Allowing God to come in and take control. And your life, you might need that tonight. Can we help you? Let God help you by laying aside the world, laying aside the burdens, laying aside the sin by the blood of Christ, letting go of it, bringing God in, and allowing Him to take control. We would love to help you. Please let us know as we stand and sing together.